So, Sandy says we're rolling. Are we rolling? All right. So, the LaSard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council Executive Committee meeting has been called to order. We have a quorum. Let the record show that we have a quorum of executive committee members. Hey, Jim. Good afternoon. We just gaveled, so you haven't missed a thing. Have a packet in the chair. So, I'll let Jim catch his breath. No, go ahead. All right. So we have before you a number of items that we need. Most of these are for information and some advice to the executive director on how to proceed. We do have we have a couple of action items. So we have an agenda before us, a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda has been adopted. Members, you should have in your packet the minutes from the last executive committee meeting, which was in preparation for our final recommendations in our appropriations bill. That was dated January 4th, 2010. One page. Motion to adopt the executive committee meeting minutes of January 4th, 2010 as drafted.
So moved.
Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting minutes have been approved. Members, we are now on to the fourth item, which is a very important part of our work this year, which is to, as called for in law, develop a 25-year framework that will help guide expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And, Bill, I'm going to turn it over to you for some context and introductions.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As members of the Executive Committee should recall, we started off on the 25-year plan, which is a requirement in our statutes, as well as Chapter 172 of last year, I believe, to provide a 25-year framework and a 10-year plan with being revisited after 5 years. We set out on that last summer with developing the sections by which we're going to plan, and then we impaneled scientific experts in each section to provide us with information and ideas on what to do. We asked the Management Analysis Division to come back and facilitate based on that input from the scientists and public input as well. To develop a framework for the plan that was developed in the September 15th and 16th meetings and used initially for the call for request for FY11. Subsequent to that point in time, we developed an advisory board, met with an advisory board of public employees from various state, federal, and university areas to give us advice on how to fill out the 25-year plan. We received that advice, and asked Ms. Judy Grew to give us a synopsis of where we are and where she thinks we're going. I want to add that you will later on today take a look at the schedule for the upcoming year. There are roughly 15 meetings scheduled for next fiscal year. And at each of those, except for the ones where we approve the final plan, we'll have updates from Management Analysis Division, who we hope to bring under contract to, as I said the other day, be the whip on this process that she's going to explain, author the final plan as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Judy, and she's been working closely with Heather Coop of our staff. So, as needed, Heather will chime in.
And so, Bill, just before Judy and others get going, so for the purposes of the executive committee, this is not an action item, but it's for information and to help provide some guidance to Judy and or Bill and staff because this will be brought forward to the council at next month's meeting for formal action.
That's correct.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Executive Committee. I'm Judy Group for Management Analysis and Development, or MAD for short. We're the state's in-house management consulting group. I think I met most of you last September when we worked on a two-day-long meeting to develop the council's goals, strategies, and priorities for the 2011 call for requests. And today I just wanted to talk with you a bit, give you an update on where we're at with the 25-year planning process for the council. Bill gave a synopsis of some of the activities from last summer, but just to refresh your memories, we spent most of last summer collecting some information and feedback from the conservation community. We held meetings throughout the state to get an idea of what some of the priorities were, both spatially, quantitatively, and qualitatively. And we brought that information to you in a document last September. From that information, you formed your 2011 strategies and priorities and identified some of the key items you wanted to focus on for the call for requests. Thank you.
Keep going.
And as you might recall, the immediate need at the September meeting during the 2 days that you met was to develop the priorities and identify what you wanted for your 2011 call for requests. And so although we had given you some 25-year objectives that had been framed out by the conservation groups, you set that aside for the time being to really focus on what you wanted to identify for your 2011 call for requests. Both Bill and Chairman Kilgore invited us back a month or two ago to talk about what went well, what didn't go so well with the process last year, what is there left to do to further develop those 25-year goals. One of the key documents that we identified was the priorities and objectives that you laid forward in the 2011 call for request, and we thought that was a good starting point for the 25-year planning process. We'll get to that later. Mike laid out some key objectives for the council's framework for funding to guide expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And, Mike, I'm almost getting to the point where I have this memorized, but I still... One is to be strategic in your resource investments and articulate what your long-term investment should be. To be science-based, which has been a foundation of your work all along. For your goals to be actionable and specific, identifying actions that need to be accomplished. For investments to be targeted and surgical, and try to identify the what, where, and how. For your goals to be realistic, especially concerning how much money you have. And finally, to create accountability for the council. And we started some discussions on if this is what we want to have happen, how do we get that going process-wise. We're now in a process that we've been informally calling the plan to plan. We started out meeting with leadership of numerous state agencies, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and talked with them about appointing some of their best minds to help us out in an advisory group to help frame out the process for that 25-year plan. Each of the members of that leadership group identified some members of an advisory group. We've already met with them once for about 3 hours. We had some time to talk with them about our the council's process up until now, had a little bit of time with them to get some initial advice from them. And what they asked us to do was frame a process for an upcoming working group. And I just wanted to pass out a document. I'm sorry it wasn't included in your packets. These are just some initial charging documents for an advisory group.
and a follow-on working group. Our advisory group members will be helping us out, figuring out the time frame, what data and input we might need, some tools that might assist the process. We've already talked about a planning calendar for the 25-year framework. At our next meeting, which will be 2 weeks from now, we'll be working on that more specifically. They'll be recommending some working group members. A follow-on working group, which might include some members of the advisory group, will be assisting the council staff and us for management analysis in pulling together data sets and information to hang more specificity on some of the goals that you have established and some of the outcomes that you want for the various LSAR sections. What we've been talking about initially is we want a lot of these goals to be expressed visually and spatially. You might recall that the process that we used last summer, we had a grid, essentially a spreadsheet with protect, enhance, and restore, and then we had prairies, wetlands, forests, and other habitat in a grid type of arrangement. We received a lot of feedback from the conservation community that type of numerical arrangement wasn't working for them, and they really wanted to have more of a landscape focus to the planning. So that's one thing that we're taking from here on in, is that we'll be working more with maps and less with spreadsheets, identifying some hotspots within the state that best meet some of the objectives that you've set forth, identifying where those areas are and what needs to happen. That's in terms of process, that's what we have identified for now. There was a document that that Bill presented at the meeting. I'm sorry, that Mike presented at the meeting. It's in your packet. It looks like this. It says Framing Outdoor Heritage Fund Habitat Outcomes 2018 and 2034 on the top of it. This was a document that Mike Kilgore presented to the advisory group as an initial thought exercise to get some of their feedback in terms of how he saw the process working and some of the information that they might like. We had generally positive feedback from the advisory group on this type of approach. The approach generally is identifying some baseline outcomes that might have been possible without outdoor heritage funding, then talking about what we might call a most likely scenario, and then finally for each of the habitat each of the habitat areas, say forests, wetlands, other habitat, talking about a maximized scenario. So a baseline, a most likely, and then a best case scenario. There was generally positive feedback to that. The advisory group asked Heather and I to go back and work on that document additionally. There's another document in your packets that she and I worked on just yesterday, talking about those baseline conditions, conservation habitat priorities, and identifying what some of those scenarios might be.
And Judy, is this
that's the next document in your packet,
okay,
where we simplified a bit from the document that Mike had presented to the advisory group. And we'll continue to work on that next week before we meet with the advisory group again. One of the items that we discussed with Bill and Mike initially is the process of setting forth objectives and goals and what we want to accomplish in the various LSAR sections, at least in my view, is a governance task. That's something that needs to be identified by this group. Once you've identified what you want to accomplish, we can accomplish some of the staff work to tell you, if that's what you want to accomplish, here are the areas of the state that will best maximize your opportunity to get there. That was one of the reasons why we wanted to make sure that we checked in with you on the habitat priorities that you did identify in September and that you published in your call for requests, to make sure that those outcomes and priorities are for you a durable statement, both statewide and within the sections of what you want to accomplish. If you're feeling good about that document and what it's saying about each of those sections, we can take that and run with it. We can say, this is what you want to accomplish. Here's what that will look like. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have the next item on the agenda, is to make sure that people don't have any changes to those outcome statements.
Just as a clarification, Judy's talking about the visions and priorities.
Vision and priorities.
That we developed with the call last time. Descriptions of how we want sections to look and things of that sort.
Are there any questions about the process?
Well, yeah, I'm curious to get why people don't like the grid, because it forces them to make a decision that sometimes is fuzzy boundaries. But what is a landscape? What's the replacement that you're envisioning? And how will that give us... how will we be able to actually use that as a replacement?
When we held focus groups with conservation professionals, one of the big difficulties they were having in identifying acreages, shoreline miles, or what have you, within those categories that you identified, is that many of them overlap. For there are wetlands in prairies, there are wetlands in forests, and of course habitat as a category, streams within all of them.
Sure.
And so then they were kind of thinking about that other habitat
category.
Are they double
counting or
yes, and they found it very difficult to try to estimate the acreage in the absence of a map to look at. We did have some maps up on the wall, but we weren't using any GIS tools or anything like that. So what we were thinking is, let's identify the areas of the state where people are saying, these are some of the hot spots within the state, some areas where you want to work. And that might be a large tract of forested land that has wetlands within it, that has other habitat benefits in terms of lakes and streams. But let's just identify spatially the areas that will best meet the council's priorities as they've identified them. And as I've spoken with council staff, if you still need to score or identify those benefits by these categories, we can perhaps do that once we've spatially identified where we want to work, and also once we get clarity on some of those outcomes that we want to achieve.
Okay. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm. So the idea would be to work backwards from the larger global picture or the subsection picture.
Yeah, I can deal with that. You don't want it's like the pig, it's a pig.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other questions for Jim?
Well, without having digested all this, I'm just curious, on this final document, this is going to be what, like a narrative? And then is there going to be, actual numerical goals? Or, what do we want this final... Who's got the vision for this final document and what it's going to actually look like and include? And
so the answer to your question from my perspective is it better have numerical targets or outcomes. And probably the best way to describe that is in this one page that Judy and Heather put together. If you flip to the one side talks about context, the other side, which is titled Framing the Outdoor Heritage Fund Habitat Outcomes, if you look down towards the bottom, it describes three different possible habitat scenarios. The first one says it's a baseline habitat outcomes. This is our benchmark. That says if not $1 was invested from the Outdoor Heritage Fund based historically on what we've done in terms of protection, enhancement, or restoration of those systems, here's where we'll be. Over 10 years, over 25 years.
Here's where we'll be, what? In numerically, we'll have this many acres of...
Okay. Based on historically what, for example, the DNR has been able to do in terms of restoration of WMAs, acquisition of EMAs, whatever. The second one says, and again, this is something that the advisory committee has been working on, says if you take the first 2 years, the first year that was appropriated by the legislature, and the second year's recommendations that we have, and you just project those out. So if you look at the number of acres affected through restoration, enhancement, and protection, if you just project kind of that trend going forward. So assuming that for the next 23 years, they look a lot like the first 2 years of our recommendations, here's what we can expect to see in terms of outcomes. Protected forests, enhanced native prairies, you name it. So that would be, and those would all be accompanied, Jim, by numeric targets. I mean, not targets, but actual outcomes, what we should be able to see. And then the third one says, if you really wanted to make an investment based on how much restoration work we can do with this money, this is the Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars, above and beyond all the other things, based on capacity and the amount of money that's available from the fund on a yearly basis, if you put all your money, all $80 million in today's terms, into a year, into, let's say, wetland restoration, based on what's out there, what's likely available, here's what you could expect to see. And so the outcomes there are obviously going to be mutually exclusive at some level. I mean, if you put all your money in wetlands, you can't do anything in forests and aquatic systems. So it lays out that maximum possibility in all these different types of systems of protection, enhancement, and restoration. But in each one of them, there will be specific numeric, whether it be acres, miles of shoreline, protected, enhanced, restored.
Okay. Why would you do the maximized habitat outcomes? I mean, what's the reason for doing that?
It's to show, and again, this nothing is set in stone, but the initial thought was to show what is the maximum that's possible. So if
but it's not possible to do all of them. It's only possible to do one or the other.
I mean, one right. So it's what's the maximum restoration of wetland work that could be feasible if you invested money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And it may be that you could never invest all $80 million a year for 23 years, which is quite likely because of capacity issues, you know, available land to restore, and so forth. But it shows above and beyond what our trajectory is now, what that outcome might be.
But wouldn't you want to look at it instead, kind of, if you shifted some money this way and that way, not maximum, but just kind of look at alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mr. Chair,
Bill.
I think that's what the maximum outcomes are for, is to inform the council on calibrating the likely habitat outcomes. We don't change what we're doing. What's going to happen, and how might we change it for wetlands? How might we change it for prairies? Things like that. Somewhere in between is the right mixture.
I was just thinking that somebody might get confused with the maximized habitat outcome. Does that mean a real potential? Because it's not.
Right. And that would have to be very clearly specified that you can't achieve all of these.
The framing of, you know, maximized opportunity habitat, we can find better language that would be
so.
A little more descriptive.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Jim?
Well, I mean, that's really going to be a picture of what economically we could accomplish. But it's not really going to show the influence or what the council thinks should happen. I mean, maybe the council thinks that, you know, we're going to prioritize wetlands. You know, this is the path we want to take. We've got this ability, but we haven't really shown how we want to mold that. I mean, we're just showing what's capable. It doesn't show any of our direction or our vision of what we think the final outcome should be.
Well, I think,
and does it, I mean, and wouldn't we want to do that or not?
I think, Jim, that what you described is addressed most likely in B. I mean, we've had 2 years now of recommendations, and you look at least the input from the council members on that call for the third year, and so we have a pretty good sense of where this council's priorities have been, and at least for the near future, what they are. And those types of priorities would clearly be reflected in B.
So we're just going to, but then you're just saying we're just going to rubber stamp it basically for 25 years.
Well, so remember, this isn't a plan. That's a really important point. This is not necessarily a plan because.
You know, so what is it?
It's a framework that shows what are the potential options and opportunities for investing in the fund. It's not to say if in the year 2010 how the money should be spent for the next 23 years. It shows if you do spend it in these ways, here are the outcomes. Other questions? Judy and Bill and Heather, a question for you would be, So there's no action today. We're just getting some input to you, and obviously there's some really good ideas that we've heard in the last 15 minutes. What is the... We're going to ask the council to adopt something in May 26th. What's that going to look like? Is it going to be that fleshed-out document that Judy, you talked about, you and Heather are working on now? Is it just something different than that? Is it this? What do you have any thoughts about what it is that's going to be before the council?
By late May, next week we'll be working on that charging document for a working group, and we'll be reviewing that with the advisory committee there the last week of April. We'll have a few more hours to work with the advisory group on that, and I think by that point we'll have a better idea of the summertime activities and essentially the plan for the summer on what we would have a work group do. We would bring back a description to you of sort of what the plan is for the summer to make sure that that plan is consistent with what you would expect, and to develop for you a document that you would want to see later on in the fall. And as I stated earlier, we're not going to have any of these working groups start from scratch. They're going to need to rely on your identified vision and priorities documents for them to be able to see what is it that the council is trying to accomplish based on its own stated vision and priorities, based on what it has funded thus far, for them to identify a trajectory, essentially, of some of those priorities over a number of years. So we'll have that more framed out by May. We'll be able to bring that back to you and talk about what that might look like. Also, by late May, we also should have a better idea of, in terms of the planning process, what all of that might cost. There's costs for our consulting services, and there might also be costs for GIS or other services that we might need to obtain from some of the different agencies or other consultants.
Okay. If we see the questions on that.
Yeah. Any other questions of Judy? Okay, Bill?
In response to some of the earlier discussion, can the next version that you bring back to the council clarify the involvement of existing and future councils in postulating periodic goals and priorities so that the council gets an idea of what its involvement in this is and how this informs the plan, informs the council, and the council acts on the plan?
If I'm understanding right, to identify the five-year planning intervals that are specified in statute.
That may be one very good way to do it.
I think if I heard it right, or interpreted your question right, it's how is the council going to use this?
How's it going to be useful?
Yeah, right. That's a better way of describing it. How is it going to be useful to the council, future councils over the next 23 years, in reviewing and looking at its recommendations for appropriations?
Well, and as one of the participants in our advisory group stated, this plan and all plans has to be a living document. Mm-hmm. As you fund additional projects and as you see the other conservation partners implementing other projects, and also as a lot of these other external factors might be affecting the landscape, large-scale changes such as climate change, you're going to need to adjust those priorities every few years. But this would be a document where you could look at it and say, well, 5 years ago, we set out to accomplish the following vision with the following priorities. 5 years ago, we thought we would be able to get this much done. You'll be able to update those estimates, update those numbers as you go along, but you'll be keeping a running history, essentially, of what this council's goals and objectives were, what it was able to fund based on those objectives, and to be able to update those goals as you go along.
I would just,
David,
I think about this in its most simplistic terms, if you take a landscape area, you're going to have a goal for restore, protect, enhance in that area. I almost see us getting to the point where we set a goal, a 25-year goal, and we measure it like the United Way does with a thermometer. How far are we to meeting that goal for any period of time? Somehow we have to keep score. But we need to do it very simplistically, because if we start to get into, you know, what's a wetland and what's a prairie and what's a this and what's a that and did we restore or did we enhance or whatever, it's going to, you know, we'll be buried in data and we really won't know what we've done. We need to have clear measures for what we want to accomplish and then be able to see if we're meeting that.
I couldn't agree more, Dave, and this notion of accountability is, I think, where this plan or this 25-year framework could be unique from the other ones, because one's developed for each of the four funds. I don't know as much about the other two of the other four anyway, but I really want something with some numerical targets and some specific metrics so that people can be held accountable, people being members of the council, the legislature. It's a way to demonstrate back to the public about this is what we think or know we can accomplish if we put our mind to it from this use of this fund, and then to look retrospectively, well, did we or didn't we accomplish it, and why or why not?
Did we over or under achieve?
Yeah. Heather.
Mr. Chair, yesterday, when Judy and I met, and Bill too, we spent a lot of time talking about qualitative measures in addition to the quantitative measures, and really talked through some evaluation models that we might use that would be incorporated as part of this plan. One of the things we heard a lot in committee hearings this year was some more qualitative kinds of questions that were not necessarily answerable by just the numeric data. And so being cognizant of that and how we talk about the plans in a way that really can get to what is the quality of the wetland restoration or the prairie restoration, those kinds of things. So building that along, the evaluation models along with the plan, will really help us, I think, in the long run.
The other thing is, you know, none of this is set in stone. We had to get the process, staff had to get the process moving. So that's why we're, you know, at least bringing together a group of folks who are saying they're willing to help us out. But everything is quite fluid. And so if you have ideas, you know, from here up through, obviously beyond the council meeting in May, but don't hesitate to share them with Bill or Sandy or Judy or Heather about particularly some of these alternatives. It really gets back to the heart of our discussion or the outcomes. What are the targets? What are the trajectories we think we can accomplish with this fund? And if those are the wrong ones, provide some insight and some advice on how to make them right.
Sure. Would you have five-year targets? Is that kind of the idea?
Kind of
to measure against?
Could be five-year, could be annual, could be. Bill, what's your thought?
It's prescribed that we have a 10-year target, but I think 5 years is the minimum of what you can.
Because you have to keep reassessing where you're at.
Well, absolutely, right.
Yeah, I believe the reassessment intervals are also specified at 5 years.
They're specified at 5 years.
Yeah. But it's got to be a living document over time. I think you've said this, and Bill both have said this several times, but it has to be. It has to be something that's periodically updated and used to assess progress or lack of progress.
To quote one of my mentors, plans are useless, but planning is essential. Oftentimes, as soon as you finish a plan, it's outdated, but the mental process of going through that plan is what's important. It helps you focus your priorities, decide where you want to expend your energy, and also it creates that level of accountability for what it was you stated you want to accomplish, so you can check in later.
Bill?
I might hope also that this plan clearly informs the council in its areas where it has discretion, so that it improves decisions and contributes to good decisions.
Any other comments or thoughts? Bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Bill, you said there's a 10-year evaluation on this?
5-year evaluation. Mm-hmm. There's a 10-year, 25-year framework, 10-year goals, 5-year evaluation.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that, because I think where Greg was coming from here, we put this too far out. Where the overachieve or underachieve is going to be an issue here, and what happens if we don't achieve expectations quite the way some people would like to see it. But, so I'm glad to hear that 5-year thing is a certain part of it.
Jim?
And will there be any part of this plan that, that gives emphasis? In other words, maybe we want to do $100 million worth of wetlands, but we think that that should really be the first part of the plan, just for whatever reason, just because of opportunity or whatever. I mean, is there any way that we emphasize how we move through these different categories, or is it just going to be broad-based? I mean, it seems to me there should be some direction on, you know, which areas we concentrate on first, or is it just going to be kind of across-the-board opportunity, or...
Bill?
I think that's up to the council, and we should express it now if we want urgency to be part of this, and if we want temporal priority to be part of it, which I think is what you're talking about. And I would suggest we do. 30 years of planning in a state agency, the urgency is maybe one of the most important things to incorporate. Opportunity and urgency.
And
we would be taking your cues for what you believe is most important, both statewide and within the various sections, from this document on your ecological section and statewide vision and priorities. As I stated earlier, I see the identification of what we want to accomplish and what the highest priorities are as your bailiwick. It's your governance responsibility to say this is what we want to accomplish. I don't want to submit that issue to a working team of GIS professionals. They can't identify what you want to accomplish for you. So if you can give us this document and say this is what we want to accomplish and these are our priorities, we can have a group of professionals say, well, this is what that looks like. And with the money you have, here's what you can accomplish within those priorities. That's why we see this document as very important to kickstart the planning process. So the more specific you can get in this vision and priorities, the better work that this group of professionals can do for you.
And I think it's important, too, that the framework is not going to usurp the responsibilities of this council over time or future council, future councils to decide what those priorities are. We can set what we think the long-range priorities are, but that's going to be reevaluated on an annual basis just by virtue of our charge. Any other thoughts? If not, thank you, Judy. This is helpful. So members, again, just for information, but they'll take, as they continue to develop documents that will ultimately be before the council to approve next month, take into advice the input that you received here. Which leads us to the next item, which is the call review. Bill, you want to give us a little context for that item?
Yes. What we have in front of you is a red line or strike out and delete that incorporates the comments that were requested by staff and turned in by the members of the council on edits that they might like to the statewide priority criteria, mission, and then each ecological section vision and priorities. I would suggest that what we want to do with this is point out anything that is a significant error that you'd like corrected, and then leave staff with the task to clean it up, brush it up, and go forward and take it. This will be incorporated in the call for requests for FY12 as the directive portion of the call.
Okay. So everything that you see is an underlined strikeout, and then there's a initials of the council member who made that suggestion?
I'm sorry, yes, that's the case.
So you're looking for some input from us about do we need to make any changes to this before we send it to the council, because they're going to ultimately put their imprint on it and adopt it at the main meeting.
Correct. Given your input today, what we will take this and term is engross it around here so that these changes occur in the document as recommended by you all today.
I do have a question just to start out. And Sandy, that I know when I sent you comments, one of the things I suggested, and it might be in the minimum criteria, but it was to really emphasize the point that expenditures from the Outdoor Heritage Fund have to be in addition to normal traditional sources of funding. You remember that part of my note? I didn't see it here, but it may be because it's not in a, it's maybe the minimum criteria. But I just wanted to emphasize that even more so, or make it more explicit as we move forward. Does that ring a bell?
No, I don't remember who's your name.
Yeah, so it's the first thing listed under number 11. Only to supplement. And it is under minimum qualifications. It's the first one.
We would only incorporate that.
Yeah. But it, so I have that. And Jim, the other, I had a question about a comment you had on the first on the statewide priority criteria, number 11. I like that. I'm just wondering if we would want to also add the word fish and wildlife. You have wildlife?
That's fine.
Yeah, okay.
I had a question about that because there are some areas that have historical value to wildlife that don't have the potential today. I mean, we're probably sitting in one. You know, don't we want something that's achievable as well? I mean, I'm all for protecting historic value, but I think we should look at where there's more than just historic value.
So, and opportunity, you're thinking?
Yeah, something to that effect. Just make it clear we're not trying to restore things that become cost prohibitive because it's not realistic.
So an opportunity for protection, restoration, and enhancement.
Yeah. And then I just had a question for Jim on number one there. I think I know where you're headed, but I wasn't sure. Our ongoing, successful, and transparent programs, what do you mean by transparent programs?
Well, basically that we know what's going on. And it's easily easy for us to understand what they've done and
see, transparent to me is, my confusion with that is, you know, we know every detail of what's going on in the organization, which I don't really care about. It's the successful programs that's important to me versus being deluged with information. You know, I want to see the outcome be successful. I'm not sure I care as much about how someone gets there and who they're working with. And
yeah. Bill had a suggested.
Okay.
I was suggesting to the chair that we may want to substitute the word accountable for transparent.
Yeah, I'm all there.
Does that get at what you were talking about, Jim? Or? Bill? That makes sense.
Okay. Jim, there are two things you're trying to accomplish with the word transparent for both the commission as well as,
I just think that I want to be forthcoming. I don't want to have to drag information out of these people or you know, to dig to find out what's happened or... I want it to be all out there so we all know what's going on. And I'm just going to throw the DNR as a prime example. I think too often we have to go in there with pick an anvil to find out what's happened, and I don't think we should have to do that.
But isn't that about being accountable for...
Well, you can be accountable at the end of the day, but I mean, I'm going back to your statement. I do care how they do it, I guess. I'm not going to, it's not a big issue. I mean, if people have heartburn with it, I mean, we'll just take it out. We can take them both out, I guess, for that matter.
I think successful is key.
Well, I think everyone wants programs that are. There's accountability, help. And I didn't have any problem with the word transparent. I wasn't quite sure what it meant.
Well, that's my issue. I think it's open to interpretation and will forever be open to interpretation.
So maybe, I don't know, Bill or you and staff might think of some ways to make sure to capture the essence of what Jim was talking about, but maybe either adding some words or modifying that a bit and just work with Jim to make sure that that captures the spirit and the intent of what he was looking for.
So we'll capture the essence of visibility of the program actions.
Transparent / accountable? Is that getting too wordy again or too descriptive?
Well, that's fine. I'd say here we want to make sure that the message is sent that the programs that are funded have these qualities. Yeah. What other again, this is not the final word. This is just to give some advice to staff about preparing this document for the council to adopt or modify and adopt. Any other suggested language changes? Throw one at you, and Jim, this was yours, so you can respond. If you go to page 4, the second paragraph, the first line of that second paragraph on page 4, you might want to just think of
that. I think, yeah, we can.
Bill, do you have any suggested language for that?
I kind of liked it myself.
We all might like it. We just might not think that it's appropriate. There you go.
Mr. Chair, I looked up the synonyms for our sewer system and found ditch and cesspool and things of that sort. I think we'll have to work on this a little bit and maintain the spirit of it. Lighten it up a little.
Got to be a euphemism.
All right.
Any other?
I just won't be blunt.
All right. Any other suggestions? I think there were. I mean, just looking at it myself, I like the ideas. We're becoming more strategic, I think, and more directive as time goes on, and that's good. Anything else on this one? Okay, Bill. Do you have enough direction on?
I think so.
Okay. All right. So then, members, the next item is revisiting the operating procedures document, which we adopted shortly after we were established back in late 2008. And, Bill, I'll turn this one over to you.
All right. Let me explain what you have in your hands with the strikeout and delete on the operating procedures. Number one is you'll see changes on every page. Those are changes to standardize the terminology, things of that sort, capitalization issues, etc. Then there are two items that we need to consider, Mr. Chair. One is a change that changes the term of office, and it's on page 2, and normally, as we currently have it written, the elections would be held in July of the odd-numbered year. June or July of the even-numbered year. The change is to change it to January of the odd-numbered year. Couple of reasons. One is it looks like our process is going to be beginning with the end of the legislative session, and if we keep the election in June, the chair is split on half of the processes cycles. Each cycle that includes an even numbered year, you would switch chairs in the middle of the cycle. Our cycle tends to end at the end of the calendar year when the recommendations are sent to the legislature. That seemed like a better opportunity to end the term of office.
So you would be recommending that to the full council. And then on page 5, there is a, I would say, an expansion of the travel authorization requirements. And in general, what this does is it sets out a way for members to request that the council support individual travel for a public purpose related to the council, and a way for the council to dispose of that request either in a positive or negative way. The disposition relies on consultation between the legislative member of this body and the executive committee and the chair. So you would be proposing these two changes, and I would suggest that we separate discussion of them.
So let's talk first about the election requirements.
You know, I tend to think this makes sense. It's cumbersome in that a chair who presides over the process of the recommendations is then not the chair during the legislative session. On the other hand, we could have a chair whose term ends at the end of the process, but who is still chair until the end of the legislative session. That's kind of where we sit now, which is equally cumbersome. So I think it's fine the way it's recommended.
Yeah, I think that the other issue is you've got this is when the terms expire, generally.
Yeah.
So you've got new members coming in at some point. You want to have them have a say in who's clear officers are chairs for the term.
Yeah, and Greg, that's a really good point. Bill and I have talked about it. That's my greatest concern is come January. Well, we know we have at least 4 members rotating off the council. Our terms expire at the end of the year. And our successors may or may not be appointed by that time. But we also may have the legislative members whose terms may not be council members. They may not be legislators. So you might be making decisions about election of officers with less than 12 people on the council. In fact, you might have a difficult time
making a recommendation.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's all just a guess. We don't know how quickly
no matter what you do, you're going to be betwixt and between. So you might as well just do what's most logical and then live with it.
My only suggestion to this would be is to say that the officers continue to serve until new officers are elected or appointed, because isn't that the way your membership also serves? Don't you continue to serve until a new member is appointed? I know the LCCMR is that way, but I guess I don't know for sure.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't be with a legislative member, though. If they're not in the legislature, they wouldn't continue to serve.
Yeah, but
they wouldn't have the position, though.
Right.
So,
yeah. If you look at the last sentence under B, under page 2, that it addresses that.
So it does. Okay, it does.
Yep. Shall serve until a successor has been
elected.
Okay,
so it is already in there. You're right.
Yeah.
I didn't look.
But as you pointed out, the problem could be where you have a chair who you could have a chair who is no longer than serving, and you need to get a new council put together to elect a new chair or vice chair or whatever.
We don't have this sentence in there that says that you guys continue to serve until your successor is appointed.
I don't think so.
No.
Well, we've done that in other areas. I guess we missed it on this one.
Unless it's in 97.8. Well, this is out of 97.8, so
that's where I'm looking. I did look for that before and didn't find it.
It's usually a good provision to have to make sure that a group continues until a successor is named.
And that's typically governed by just open appointments or appointment statutes, or is that specific?
Yeah, general. Well, I think we had it for you. You don't?
It is.
Yeah. It's in their statute for the LCC.
Well, what does it say, Susan? we're informal here.
I'm going.
Yeah, come on and join the fun.
You serve until your appointment.
Mr. Chair, members, it does say they serve until their successor is appointed, but with the case of a legislative member who wouldn't run for re-election or who was defeated, there would be a vacancy there.
Okay. and it doesn't have a time or an end date, so you serve up to 6 months or a year or 30
and
days?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Susan Thornton, House of Senior Staff. Yes, it is a time certain. It runs through June 30th of the following year. So our appointments start in January, as I believe yours do also. So it's until June 30th. Or until the successor is appointed. So if appointments weren't made, you could have vacancies come July 1.
Okay.
It's just darn messy.
Yeah, it is. And we can't
force it all, so no.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the good news is there isn't much work that we do, you know, really between January and the end of the session anyhow. So you kind of have time where things catch up.
Right. Okay, so I think we're good to go, at least as a proposal to the full council. I've got some editing suggestions just on a couple of things I'm going to give to Bill, and he can either dispose of them or incorporate them.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then, Bill, you had, now we're going back to the authorization of travel. And again, this is really just to put a formal process in place by which council members, because we've had that on occasion where members would like to attend a meeting that would directly benefit the council, not necessarily for their own benefit, but for the benefit of the council's deliberations. So we're trying to formalize that a bit and make sure it's consistent with the legislative policies for reimbursement and travel and so forth.
Right. And if you look on page 5A4 is where the majority of the changes are. And travel for regular council or committee business, such as this meeting, is authorized elsewhere in here on a blanket authorization. But basically what this change does is it provides a way for a member or, for that matter, as you'll see later, someone in the public to request travel meeting with council members that requires travel, and then the ability to have the chair and the legislative member of the executive committee review and approve that. It indicates that travel needs to be for purposes of the council, at least in the form that we've put together. Sandy, do you have any other additions to this?
No. Bill, you had mentioned something about it applies to council and other members. Did I misunderstand that? Because I don't see that here.
The request could be something similar to the Renville County request.
Okay, so an other entity requests a member of our council to attend.
Okay. Right.
You know, we've done that in the past. Have we approved those? I mean, is this...
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigts, and no, and that's why we're visiting this today. We've had some people who have had an interest in us joining them, and in addition, we've had some members that have had an interest in joining people.
I guess one thing I would suggest is that if we can somehow put into words... a statement that the purpose would benefit the council, not necessarily an individual member's understanding, but that the council as a whole would benefit from that participation. And obviously that's going to be somewhat subjective, but we just want to make sure that whatever authorization we provide, that it does benefit this group collectively, and it furthers our purpose to help advise the legislature. Bill?
Point of interest, maybe to benefit by way of informing at the next meeting what you accomplished at that meeting.
Yes.
Share the information.
I think if somebody's going to go to a meeting on our behalf, they should write up a little report. I mean, in writing is what I would say, because otherwise we'll never know who's going.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to get paid, you ought to bring something back that's traceable.
Right, and demonstrates a benefit.
That's right.
We will incorporate those changes.
Thoughts from this side of the table? I think
we've...
Yeah, I don't know. Wes? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
it's an important issue because I think a lot of our responsibilities are to convey, to inform, to learn. about some of the problem areas. I know personally I've attended probably about 30, 35 meetings in the last year, all the way from Pheasants Forever State Convention, the DU State Convention, to the Red River Valley Watershed District meeting, or actually the whole basin watershed meeting. And you always learn something from those, and you share the information, and sometimes these meetings come up where 30 days, that's a short cycle. Sometimes they come up in a week's notice. We'll just handle them accordingly. I haven't been submitting expense reports or anything on that, but I think it's an important conveyance where the council members get out and talk to the public around the state.
I don't agree with that, but I'm kind of where you're coming from with this. We shouldn't be reimbursed for everything we do here. I mean, some of it should be our personal responsibility. If we want to go to a meeting, we should go to a meeting. But somehow I just, the thought that the council is going to reimburse people for going to go learn something every time they think that's appropriate hits me the wrong way.
Well,
but, you know, I'm the one who won't put in any request for reimbursement at all, so it's just...
Well, and remember that our expenditures, not only for projects, but also for the council's expenditures, staff and members, they're audited every 2 years. And so, you know, that's certainly going to be looked at very carefully by the legislative auditor on a very frequent basis. So
if we're going to spend any money at all on this kind of stuff, we need something in writing that says we're getting benefit from it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We're going to hear it if we don't have that.
Yeah, and a report back in some formal way to the council explain what that benefit is.
I think it should be in writing so that we have it traceable in writing to the legislative auditor. Otherwise, they're going to come back and say, why did you spend this money? And I will tell you 3 years later, no one will remember. And you'll be making stuff up. Which
what I will do is write it up to make it in writing and a report back.
Sure.
At the next meeting, in case there's some discussion that might arise.
Jim?
Maybe we could just have a standard form.
Yeah.
Councilmember would have to fill out if you want to.
Sure.
Greg,
how does this work with staff? I see it talks about members. How does staff get approved for travel?
Well, staff has an administrative budget, and they work with the...
Don't they have to have approval by the chair, though, to travel?
Well, Bill has not had that either opportunity or request, but I am assuming that if there is a request for expense authorization for travel, that he would go to the executive director of the LCC for approval, just like any executive director. No, that's not the case.
Come right from the director.
Bill, tell me how this works, or Greg Himinger is here, one of the two. How does that work?
And the chair is director of each commission or council has authority to manage state budget, including in-state travel. So they're on their own authority that they either authorize the staff or themselves to go to meetings in the state. If they want to attend some event outside of the state, they have to get approval of the LCC chair as well.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other? So, Bill, do you have enough direction to make changes? Again, this will come up to the council for approval in May.
Ms. Smith, are we in good shape?
Yes.
All right. So on that very topic, agenda item number 7, we have two invitations for travel approval. Bill, can you give us some background information on these two requests?
Let me take them in the order of Renville Soil and Water Conservation District first. And this is an invitation jointly to the Clean Water Council, the LCCMR, and Lasard Sam Dabro Heritage Council. And it's to take a look at issues in the Minnesota River Valley, the Minnesota River watershed as well. And it's an invitation for July the 21st of 2010. They're going to show us wildlife issues, land use practices in the upper watershed, and how they contribute to the issues we face as a group of advisors, recommending bodies.
We're going to see some completed Clean Water Council projects, hear from professionals who've charted their improvement in one stream in particular. There's a short canoe or kayak trip down the river. We're going to learn where we're going to learn about past, present, and future fisheries issues, fish for catfish, sturgeon, and other varieties of fish. I'm not sure about that. There's some finalization of this tour to take place. And there'll be a walking tour of granite rock outcroppings easements, which is an LCCMR project, and the DNR Wildlife Management Area, which is one of our projects. And approval that we're looking for is a approval of individual members to attend this event. If there are enough people coming from the metro area, we will, looking to Ms. Thornton, we will have a bus leaving the Capitol. Others can rendezvous on their own. So, that's the Renville Soil and Water County Soil and Water Conservation District. The other request is from the Red River Basin Flood Damage Reduction Work Group, which includes agencies and border water and soil resources units, counties, and things of that sort. And it's a joint invitation from the Red River Watershed Management Board and the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group. They want to talk to us about how they, the work that they do in the Red River Basin directly relates to habitat. They're inviting us also to the annual conference on the Red River Mediation Work Group. It's their hope that this interchange will further the council's outcomes by building program capacity in partnership of watershed districts, soil and water conservation districts, project teams, and local sportsmen's clubs. And also it would strengthen ties with the agricultural community in terms of habitat benefit. So those are the two requests that the council has before. And what would be in order here is a recommendation to either approve or not approve this particular item.
So let me ask a question on both of these. Are these on our radar screen as things that we had identified and we wanted to do, or are these simply requests from people that we're responding to?
Mr. Chair.
Bill?
I may have the agenda out of order. The things that we are affirmatively looking to visit in the field are later on today. These are invitations of individuals who would like to talk with us.
And my issue is if we approve these, we will get 100 invitations of people who want to talk to us. I think we need to be proactive, not reactive, or we're asking for a lot of trouble.
Wes?
Maybe I can give a little background. First of all, the Renville one, I definitely would like to attend that one because I think we've got two of the major opportunities within the state, that being the Minnesota River Valley and the Red River Valley, as disaster areas right now, that any improvement we make would be a positive. I personally attended every SWCD district from Kitson County down to Lake Traverse. And the biggest objective we've got in this area is shallow lakes restoration, moist soil management in the primary duck habitat area. They're going to be accomplishing some of the flood mitigation by doing some of the restoration things that we've got in mind. There was a work study group that was generated in 1998, the Red River Basin Flood Damage Work Group Agreement. Excellent report. It pretty much lays out the framework of the Red River Valley and what we have to do as far as the impoundment, the restoration of the wetlands to control the flood waters in the Fargo area. The plan was supposed to have started in 1999 for implementation. The basic layout of the plan says that they have to control about 880,000 acres in that Red River Basin area to mitigate the flood levels in the Fargo-Moorhead somewhere in that 3 to 6 foot range. All the LIDAR mapping has been done in that area. They're doing better analysis of just what impact it's going to have on some of these projects. The DNR is suggesting some of the moist soil management techniques. I really look at the moist soil management technique as a combination of wetlands restoration, shallow lakes restorations, and so forth to accomplish what they want to do. They're looking at some plans that they've done in the southern United States, which just are not applicable in the our geological geographic areas. The plans or the programs that we've had submitted to us have been more flood mitigation programs or plans and or suggestions, and I think a lot of those have been rejected by the council because flood mitigation was the primary element. But if we look at wetlands restoration with control structures and proper control of these, this really accomplishes a double-fold problem of solving the wetlands problems of restoring them and the flood mitigation. It's a major, major political battle right now. At the conference in Grand Forks, they came up with the Red River Basin long-term flood solutions. Again, they're looking at mitigation, but in this last year, the diversion project around Fargo was the primary project that's on the political agenda. And you might say that the federal feeding trough has been rolled out with about $1.4 billion to solve this problem around the Fargo area and exacerbate the problem all the way downstream to Lake Winnipeg, which is north downstream. It's a major ecological problem, major disaster that they're about to impound on. The scientific professional community, the soil and water conservation districts, the watershed management districts agree that impoundment restoration is the answer. We're on the kick with the Army Corps of Engineers right now to start implementing the $1.4 billion project.
Our deal is habitat restoration. It isn't flood mitigation.
Exactly.
We stay out of it. And so I'll go back to, was either of these trips, are they on our agenda to meet what our priorities are, or is it just because people have invited us and I don't want to do something that isn't our priority first and just in response to someone's invitation, because we will have invitations from everywhere if we do that.
I believe that our invitation to these two are addressing two of the major ecological problems in the state of Minnesota, that we could have a major gain in restoration of the wetlands and that primary migration area of the ducks, and the side benefit from our viewpoint is flood mitigation. From their viewpoint, flood mitigation is the first point. I think it's very critical that we look at this entire area. The Minnesota River at this point is considered an impaired water. It's polluted to the point where this shouldn't be our primary emphasis, but proper wetlands restoration, filtration basins, and proper drainage is one of the solutions to restoring the clean water of the Red River and of the Minnesota River. So I think it directly applies to what our interests are in a roundabout way. We're after restoration, preservation, protection. The final result is that flood mitigation will be one of the benefits.
Let me make a suggestion. I know we're going to jump around, but I'm just looking at the schedule, which is the next agenda item. And Bill and staff have put together a proposed schedule of meetings for the 2010 balance. And if you look in June, there's at least proposed a trip by the council, a formal council meeting, business meeting, field trip up in the Moorhead area, and it says in the Red River Valley. Number one, they're looking at having members on June 23rd. The proposal for our schedule is June 15th to June 17th. I mean, there's very little likelihood we're going to get members back up there within a week. And I'm just wondering if there's a way we can't link in some of the things we're looking for. I do share Dave's concern that if we just start opening up the door to whoever asks us to attend, we're going to get inundated. And I know some members last fall had a real sour taste in their mouth when we were out on a field tour, and it turned out one of the presentations they ended up lobbying us for one of the projects that was we ended up seeing in a proposal later that fall. And I'm just wondering, if, in particular, on the Red River one, if we can't somehow work in some of the key things that we're interested in as part of our business meeting, our two-day business meeting up in the Red River Valley, which, again, Bill, we're jumping around and I'm jumping ahead. I apologize, but it seems like it's relevant to this discussion.
Well, perhaps we ought to go to the next item in your packet, which should be a sheet that looks like this that has dates scheduled, areas to visit, locations, and learning opportunities, and look at that June 15, 16, 17 block. And we were going to present you with a choice on that particular period of time as to whether or not you wanted to look at the Forest Prairie transition area or the Red River Valley. So I think that that's the issue that's at hand first needs to be disposed of. So if you wanted to do the Forest Prairie transition, then it would be perhaps in front of the
meetings.
Yeah, these are our trips.
Okay, so these are scheduled meetings of the council that we've already laid out and put holds on.
So
I would,
Dave,
for some of us, it would be really nice if one of these days on this 15th, 16th, and 17th was our meeting, and the other 2 days were field trips instead of a partial meeting every day, so you have no choice but to either not show up or show up for all of the meeting.
It's just a clarification, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Phil?
It's two of the 3 days.
Okay.
And the meeting will be on one day.
Okay, that's great, because it looked, when I read the original stuff, it looked like it was a half a day meeting in each of the days, and I was like, oh, shit.
No.
So thank you.
A half a day meeting associated with each inquiring field trip.
Yeah. Bill or Jim, any thoughts on kind of, I guess, either the specific request or input about kind of the principle of entertaining these types of requests to go visit?
Well, I mean, I think it's nice to see them, and if a council member wants to go or attend them, I think it's nice to know that they're out there, but I agree, and I agree with both you and Les, but I think we should set the agenda. I mean, we don't want people to, you know, you look at Ron Harnack, I mean, these people are basically lobbyists, and they're going to be trying to direct us in certain areas. I think we should set the agenda if we're going to go into these areas, and we should look at what we want to look at, of course, with some kind of direction, but I feel more comfortable with that.
In the case of the field tours of the council, we do set the agenda. In the case of authorizing individual travel, that's a little bit more difficult.
No, you can't with individual travel. But this is asking not for individuals, it's asking for the whole group to come up or go over to.
I'm looking at this as a request for authorization of individual members to attend, not to have a council meeting field tour.
That's different.
Yeah.
That's different, yes.
Isn't that your interpretation, Bill, that it's not an official meeting of the council?
In the case of both of the letters that you have before you, Renville and Red River Flood Basin, yes. Again, I just wanted to remind you that how we got into this particular pickle we're in right now is that we had the Red River Valley as one of two options for a formal council trip. And I'm assuming that the decision is one or the other, or
right.
Yeah, we don't want to.
No, we don't want to
go up there 1 week and then authorize individual travel the next week. That
right.
Seems silly.
Right. And Bill, were you looking at having this schedule approved by the council, or is this something that you would like us to give you advice on, and we just set? We've already got the dates held.
we need to have approval from the executive committee on this because it affects our next meeting.
Okay. So really the only... So let's take up, members, we're going to jump around. Let's take up the 2010 meeting schedule then, because I think the decision on that will certainly dictate how we treat these requests.
Mr. Chair, yes. just one personal note here. For the 16th, 17th, I'm leaving on the 14th to be with my bride celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary up in Alaska, so I'll miss that whole time over here.
Well, we can can't do that.
Is he offering to pay?
Are you authorizing a trip up there to have a meeting with?
Yes.
No,
he was going to. I really think that Red River Valley meeting is the watershed district is a very, very critical one for us to. Have a presence there. The trip is not as important as the Red River Valley one. This is has some major long-term implications and opportunities.
Well, wouldn't you pick that up on your council meeting trip too?
Well, I'm talking about the invitation to the 23rd meeting of the Red River Basin Commission. They're going a direction that is not a good direction to go, and they're looking for help, and they're looking for suggestions, and it's a real political hot potato right now. It's going to get a lot worse.
What is our role in that?
Our role is preservation, protection, restoration of one of the greatest opportunities that we've got in the state of Minnesota, and that's the Red River Valley, the great migration corridor all the way from the Canadian border down to Traverse. And if we have a combination of the restoration of the wetlands, we do a double whammy, double purpose here of not only restoring a lot of the wetlands that are identified by the different watershed districts, the Manston Slough, the Red Path projects, the Tinta Slough. These are great migration resting areas and also habitat areas.
But I'm asking what is our role in the political battle that's going on as to whether or not they build the big dike, which is what you were talking about, us being up there to have a say in, which is what I'm just not following that.
Okay, the cut that we have in it is there's alternative plans that dedicated funding is providing funds for restoration of some of these projects and potential solution to some of the major serious problems that are existent in there. And if we can look at how we can be of a joint value in some of the restoration projects in this area, I think it's going to benefit everybody concerned.
Chair.
Yeah, Bill.
I think I understand less what you're talking about because I've been somewhat involved in that and been talked to a fair amount. Not lobbied, but informed an awful lot about what goes on there, and of course my own interest coming from that area. But pooling back water, major functions of pooling back water is certainly going to help the migration. Is that what you're talking about?
Restoring the shallow lakes.
Okay, restoring them, but they would come to us for funding for those types of projects. That's one of the suggestions or one of the plans.
One of the projects we approved this last year was the Graceville one, not Whiskey Creek. Moonshine Lake. That's one of the major restoration projects that's going to be restoration and impoundment. Jim?
Well, I mean, maybe this, what we just want to do then is from, Les's talk here is we on the 16th, on the 15th and through the 17th, we do go to the Red River Valley and learn what we can learn.
I'm fine with that.
You know what we're doing?
No, we have two options. So really the decision that we're here to ask to help advise on is whether on the June 15th, 16th, or 17th, it'll be a two-day meeting, whether we go to the Red River Valley or the Forest Prairie.
Mr. Chair, can I make one more recommendation?
Sure.
If we had that meeting the 10th and the 11th, which would be the week before that, would fit in a lot better. I spent many years working on this project, or these projects already. It's been a half of a lifetime, and I think I could do some good groundwork as far as lining up some of the projects to look at, review, and be presented with some of the facts and information. It's up to you guys.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of these schedules have been set months in advance. I know Sandy polled all of the members months ago about their availabilities. I'm not sure how much flexibility we have on alternative dates.
And this trip was just really determined the last 30 days.
I'm not hearing any opposition to doing the Red River Valley on June, but I think the message is we can do that Red River Valley trip, but structure around our needs and our interests, and you know, work with them, but certainly focus on our interests and our information needs. Jim?
Well, seeing as Les wants to be here, I mean, could we move Red River Valley to one of these other, and move whatever we're going to do on one of these other trips to the June date? Is that
Bill?
I'm going to defer to Ms. Coop as to whether or not that would be a problem. We had scheduled Southwestern Minnesota May 26th and 27th as a result of one member wanting to see the migration in the spring. That was as close to the spring as we could get. So that would be what would be at risk. I think that the switch would have to be between May and June, as the one below is a joint tour with LCCMR, and they've got those days set aside, one of those days.
Personally, I don't see any problem switching the dates. The way the schedule came together is I talked with many of you individually and members who weren't here about what kinds of things that you'd like to see on a field trip or experiences that you'd like to have. And I tried as best as I could to incorporate them. We then went to the DNR and asked them to help us put together Poles Mothers field staff to see what are some of the highlights that they would like us to take a look at. And so this tentative sketch that you have before you really reflects all of that, and then just some additional research that I have done on projects in various parts of the state, as well as proposals that we have funded in FY10 and proposals that are in our current recommendation. So nothing is, we have not made any particular logistical commitments at this point in time, other than just holding the dates for council meetings. So I guess the short answer is we certainly can switch things around. We do have two options for the June meeting, one in the Forest Prairie Transition Zone and the other in the Red River Valley.
It's early this year.
But it sounds like people are pretty keen on the Red River Valley tour.
I want to point out that in addition, we have contacted the funded programs to see if they have items that are underway or accomplished in these areas. So that's part of the planning, too.
Well, just talking to Jim and Les, they said, you know, the whole issue about the migration, had it been a normal spring, that probably would have worked, but we probably missed or will miss the migration. Given
one point, Mr. Chair, Moorhead's kind of the bottom of the lake. There's not much happening there, and I think you have to get out in the watershed districts, the Buffalo Red, the Bois du Sioux district. If you're looking at a central location, the Fergus Falls area is probably in a central location to look at the different projects. If you go to Moorhead, you're really sitting in a no man's zone there.
Well, I'll leave that up to staff to work to. But I think, Kelly, what you described is making sure that, you know, we're looking at projects either we funded or our interest relative to our priorities as laid out in our call. Those are things that are really front and center in terms of what we should be looking at.
And addressing some of the current issues, conservation issues as well. In talking with project managers as well as other organizations, I asked them to really think about new approaches, partnerships between NGOs and public and other private groups, as well as innovative strategies and techniques that they would like us to have a look at. I also stressed very strongly that we were not interested in any a shilling, if you were, for the project. So we really wanted to have this as a learning opportunity rather than an opportunity for FaceTime to promote individual projects that might come before.
Yeah. I think we should tell them all if they ask for money, we won't give them.
That's right.
That doesn't stop it.
The bus starts up immediately, and we just head on the bus.
Their project? No.
All right. Let me put a proposal in. So, Bill, as an executive committee, need to authorize this schedule. Are there any other concerns members have about the travel schedule?
My only concern is it would be really nice if we're only doing 2 days in June and 1 day in September that we actually pick the day, instead of having a three-day window that we don't know what we can do with in the rest of our lives.
My understanding is that members should have held those 3 days.
Well, I just don't want to hold it forever because there are plenty of other things pulling on my time, and I imagine I'm not the only person.
My suggestion would be, instead of making that decision on the spot, that...
I'm not asking for it on the spot. I'm just a request,
right,
that we hone in on real dates quickly.
Well, and so that in the packet that goes out for the May meeting, so within a month, those dates are locked in. Because I want to make sure staff has adequate opportunity to adjust.
I don't want to push staff in an unreasonable way. It's just a request.
We will finalize these dates as soon as possible and get them out to you.
Great.
All I was asking.
Great. So members, I entertain a motion to adopt the 2010 meeting schedule with the change that we do the somewhere up in that Red River Valley area, the option 2 in May, and southwestern Minnesota in June.
So moved.
We have a motion on the table. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. We have our travel schedule. Now, now we're going to go back to the request from the Renville County Soil and Water Conservation District. Members, my suggestion to you is that we authorize individual members to travel to that. It's not a formal council meeting, but individual members, there will be an opportunity to interact with members. Okay. We have a motion to approve individual travel to that meeting in July 21st.
Do you want to limit on how many are going to go?
I want to make sure that there's opportunity for any member who so chooses to go.
Quorum issue. We will notice.
We'll have to notice it, yeah.
As an event.
So we need to take action on that, Bill?
We need to take action.
So we need to take action on that as well. So a motion would be that for the July 21 invitation to meet with the Renville Soil and Water Conservation District, LCCMR, and Clean Water Council, that we authorize travel for individual members to attend. Motion. We have a motion to that.
I moved it.
We have a motion on the table. Further discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. We are now down to number 9, accomplishment plan amendment. Bill?
Before we move on, I just want to make sure everybody understands that the meeting schedule is contingent upon the passage of the recommendations.
No money, no go.
No money, no go.
That's right. Thank you.
Which recommendation, Bill?
That's a $58.9 million.
Okay. Something I should know.
If things go well, Bill, what do you think we'll have a final goal and schedule for this trip?
For this trip being which trip?
May.
Oh, I think we've got a couple of weeks with ease. I'm headed. Staff is shaking their heads. Yes. The next item, Mr. Chair, do you want
to... No, I'd ask you to introduce the topic and what we have to do as an executive.
You'll find in your packet a copy of an accomplishment plan amendment that was offered by the Department of Natural Resources, Dennis Simon. What I'm having passed around is a brief on testimony regarding the first attempt to get approval of this accomplishment plan.
And essentially what happened is the department sent us an accomplishment plan with an I-35 roadsides for wildlife project. Representative of the department testified that MnDOT and DNR were having second thoughts about what they had sent us, and technically withdrew the I-35 roadside portion of their proposal and promised to come back with an interstate-based proposal more closely connected to WMAs. That's what you find in your packet. The discussion of members is included. That is that part of the discussion that deals with the roadsides issue. And the motion and the appropriation were are shown there. The motion was to approve the Accelerated Prairie and Grassland Management Accomplishment Plan with the roadsides for wildlife component stricken. You'll notice that roadsides are one of a number of things that this money can be used for. I've also attached a map to the Department of Natural Resources proposal that indicates what they are requesting to do. And they are requesting to do roadside prairie restoration along the 7 miles of interstate between Walnut Lake WMA and Save the Wetlands Wildlife Management Area. I can, under our operating procedures, approve amendments to work plans. This is one, given the discussion that we had, that I was not willing to approve on my own. I wanted the council, the executive committee, to discuss it. I'd like to have advice from the executive committee on what to do. I will follow that advice. The reason it's being brought to you this way is to try, in the event that you agree to this, to get them into the field as soon as possible.
So, discussion, advice, what are your thoughts about this? Hopefully you've had a chance to look at this amended language to the accomplishment plan.
So what should the executive director do is the question. Approve or not approve?
You know, one thing that stood out, I'll just make a comment, I know Jim's got some thoughts. It seemed to me that the contracting amount seemed really high, $1,500 an acre. And help me out, those of you who have seen this more. Heather, you've looked at some of the accomplishments, or Bill, it just seems like that's a steep price tag for restoration work.
Depends on the diversity of the restoration.
Yeah. Well, I know seed can cost $1,000 an acre if it's very diverse, has a lot of different forms, but boy, that just seemed high overall. Anyway, that was my thought. Other members? The executive committee or
Jim? Where is the amended? Is this the amended?
No, it's in your packet. It's the work plan.
I mean, the good news is it's adjacent to other protected land, so it's not just a narrow strip in and of itself.
Right. I guess the question I would have, and this was the issue that we talked about in the meeting, was, is that going to cause more of a hazard problem?
And, well, sure.
Jim?
I mean, I just don't understand why they're pushing this. We don't want to attract wildlife to roadsides. Number two, it's very difficult to establish prairie where you've got all those chemicals built up along the side of that road. It's difficult to burn interstate right-of-ways. You've always got the possibility of some pheasant hunters stopping and doing something that they shouldn't be doing. I just don't understand why they're pushing this program.
Mr. Chair, Councilman Cox, the discussions I've had hinge on the appropriation language that seems to them to be somewhat directive of working on roadsides. They feel compelled that they ought to work on roadsides. They've looked at all the roadsides they can work on, and because we require the work to be done on permanently protected property, the only permanently protected property with either a conservation easement or state or public fee ownership is the federal four-lane highway roadsides. The rest of the easements are transportation easements, according to the department. So they are confined. If they're going to do roadsides, they feel that they're confined to do them across along interstate highways or four-lane federal highways. Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox.
Jim. Mike, well the roadside for wildlife program was pushed back in the 70s when they were farming fence row to fence row. It was the only undisturbed land basically left, and they promoted it as, you know, a big opportunity for ground nesting birds. But it's not a good idea. It is not good habitat. Why would we promote a bad idea? I mean, it was a desperation program, basically what it was. Why would we throw good money after bad? I mean, I just don't understand it. If that's what we're down to, the only land we have to work on is interstate right of ways, I think we're in a lot of trouble. I just don't.
Perhaps it would be worth asking council what sort of discretion we have here.
Mr. Chair, members, if you do look at the appropriation language, the appropriation does clearly say including roadsides. So unless the council wanted to recommend it, that be taken out, I think the appropriation does say that including roadsides.
So is that permissive or is that directive, that part of the appropriation has to go to roadsides?
I can read it to you. It gives a $1.7 million appropriation to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to accelerate the restoration and enhancement of native prairie vegetation on public lands, including roadsides. It's not really discretionary.
Doesn't, Mr. Chair, doesn't say how much you have to spend on the roadside part, but it does.
Well, $1,500, 1 acre, and we're done, right?
So what I'm hearing then is that, given your interpretation of the appropriations language, there needs to be some money going into the roadside for wildlife piece. Or, okay.
So Jim, I think you're absolutely right. I think we made a mistake in approving it, but I think we're stuck.
Well, we didn't approve it, though.
We approved the
language.
The language.
This is last year's appropriation.
This is last year's appropriation. This is the work plan for that, and they're changing the I-35 to the I-80 corridor. Is what?
Okay, so Wayne Anger's motion to approve the accelerated prairie grass and management accomplishment plan with roadside for wildlife performance stricken. Motion approved.
Just please, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Note that what he was moving was a proposal that had an accomplishment plan that had been verbally amended to exclude that portion. Right. So it was technically never before us.
Right. Now you have.
Bill, what are your thoughts?
This versus the I-90?
I think the issue now is we're hearing from the council that. Their interpretation of the statute is that there needs to be some money in for roadsides for wildlife, consistent with the legislative direction. So we don't have the authority to say $0 for roadsides for wildlife. The DNR is saying $225,000 for roadsides for wildlife. I'm not going to second guess where they want to put that. They've identified a piece of land down by Walnut Lake, WMA. That makes sense to them. The question really is, do we want to fund $225,000 or something less than that, down to a dollar?
I don't understand, Mike. Why are we committed to this? Why can't we strike the roadside portion?
I'll defer to council to try and explain that.
Well, it's got roadside benefits.
Yeah. That's what the appropriation language says. Greg and Janelle, their interpretation is that means it's not discretionary, that some of that money needs to go for that program.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think if we were to have a mind that we did not want any money to go to roadsides, we would have to ask for an amendment of the law that appropriated this money, which is in the laws of 2009, Chapter 172. Mm-hmm. And I'll just leave it at that.
And just out of question, Bill, do we have any such language in this year's recommendation, Bill?
I don't believe so. I'll double check.
Yeah, please do. Okay, so given that,
excuse me, Mike.
Yeah, Jim.
Can I just get a? I didn't understand your explanation on Wayne Anger's motion. Why is that not relevant?
Well, it's wasn't before us. The section that he intended to strike was not before us. It had been withdrawn by the applicant.
Oh, they pulled it before we...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That was his... Madam Chair.
Bill?
Excuse me, I've been in Mary Murphy's committee too long. I listened to the tape this morning, and that was the first thing that Mr. Simon did, was explain that there was some disagreement in DNR and MnDOT about the I-35 piece, and he withdrew it, and then went on to present the remainder of the...
We kept on going after us.
Right. You kept going after it, yes, but it wasn't there. Right.
You need...
Well, so the issue is we're not taking a formal motion. We're giving Bill some advice. Bill, what's your advice?
My suggestion would be that do we need somebody to be here at the meeting from the DNR to better sell this or convince us more so? Or it seems like we have...
Well, I think the amended...
Somewhat decisive here.
Yeah, I think the amended accomplishment plan is their argument that this is what they think is the best use of that money. The roads edge wildlife. I mean, my inclination, Bill, is given the council interpretation of the law is to give you the direction to approve it. I'm with Jim. I think it's not the best use of our money. I think there's a lot of liability there. I think it constrains what we can do. I think, Jim, you're absolutely right that with the all the chemicals that are put down on that road, our likelihood of getting a good diverse native prairie is probably diminished a lot, but I don't know if we can do much else other than cut the appropriation. And if we do that, it sounds like from reading their accomplishment plan, we might as well just throw money away.
Mr. Chair, if you all were to give me that advice, I would approve it with reservation and admonishment.
Bill?
Maybe Jim could explain to me what liability are you talking about, or... Did you talk about liability?
Well, Mike brought it up, but I mean, if you're attracting wildlife to an interstate freeway and a deer jumps up and goes through somebody's front windshield, I suppose they can go back and say, hey, you guys promoted this.
Sue the state.
You promoted it here.
So does this go, I mean, I'm not familiar with what they're planning. Mm-hmm. Is this going to go literally right up to the shoulder?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the right of way.
Regulations are one we can cut and one we can...
This is not our shining moment.
Oh, yeah.
But we should learn from this.
Well, I think the other thing, and I'm going to go back to our earlier statement. The DNR knew that the council was not high on this program. I mean, we made a very plain tone, and they come back with this accomplishment plan. I say, go ahead, let them have it, and then wait till they come back next year.
Chair.
Yeah, Bill.
I'll put those sentiments in the letter.
I got this on tape. Okay, I think we've given Bill enough direction on this one. We're at the end of our agenda. Is there, I guess we have no other business to transact, so Bill?
No, I don't. I'm just talking about the 1,500 per acre here, and I look at this eco-type thing here. Again, here we go with this definition, but I know that's a different day, so I'm sorry, but...
All right. So a motion to adjourn the executive
committee.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor?
So move, he's out the door.